we come.
Now the world don't move.
And you knew where you were then.
Exciting and new.
It's TV Talkaholics in your ear holes every month. This is episode 46. Thank you for downloading and pressing play. Hi, Matthew.
Hi, David.
I'm really excited again for this week's show.
That makes one of us. We had a good run.
I swear to God. The show shouldn't have been called The Bionic Woman or The $6 Million Man. It should have just been called... When I hear that sound, that is like the happiness of my childhood. Again, I'm well aware we're dealing with something that made me deeply happy as a child, and I can't completely untether myself from that as I watch this with my adult eyes. I could do that with The Facts of Life for some reason, but I can't seem to do it with these. Maybe because we're not watching the whole damn series. But The Bionic Woman, Season 3, Episode 12, All for One, from January 7th of 1978. So, want to give me some general thoughts? Was it terribly painful for you?
Yes.
Aww. Yes.
It's just, what the hell was happening in the 70s?
Well... I mean, we know what's happening. A lot of weed, a lot of coke, a lot of...
Yes. everybody take a Quaalude and let's make a TV show.
It is interesting how the energy level and the intensity is so much less, like...
Non-existent.
Wow. Dude is coming around the corner with a gun. Oh. I'm going to look around and, yeah, I guess I'll go around this corner and hide here because he's running after me. I get it. I do get it. I am not completely rose-colored glasses looking at this. I'm aware. It's pretty fucked up to watch it now, but... The Bionic Woman, the entire series, is available for free streaming on the Roku channel at the moment, as of this recording. And interestingly, its parent series, The $6 Million Man, is available on Peacock at the moment. This was an offshoot from The $6 Million Man. $6 Million Man ran for 5 seasons between 1974 and 1978. It was started with a TV movie pilot, just like we were discussing with Wonder Woman last month.
5 fucking seasons. 5 years.
It was a big deal, Matthew. It was popular.
They came up with the same damn plot every week for 5 years, and people ate it.
We had 3 networks at the time. Our choices were much more limited. But yeah, it was cool. And again, I guess you have to say, you know, the 60s and the 70s is when they really tuned into aiming television for, what do they say, middle schoolers, like 8th graders. And then the parents just kind of have to go with it. That's what this is all about, really. This is a show that's more attuned to my life and certainly my generation, because, you know, I was 6 years old when it started, and, you know, this was the coolest thing, man. A bionic dude, part, you know, biological, part electronics, a cyborg, fucking cool. Anyway, there was a season 2 storyline that ran in March of 1975. They thought, let's give Steve Austin a little bit of a love life. Let's have him go back to his hometown. Let's have him fall back in love with his high school sweetheart, a tennis pro named Jamie Summers, played by Lindsay Wagner. Well, she ends up having an accident. He convinces the government to give her bionics too in order to save her life. without her consent. So problematic. And her body rejects the bionics, and she ends up with a blood clot in her brain. And at the end of this two-part episode, she dies. Dead. But back in the day when people wrote letters, people had that kind of time to be like, oh, I love that episode. What a shame that that beautiful young girl had to die.
Well, they had time during the show to write a letter.
Well, anyway, it's like a watch a lot. I'm looking at, it's minute 17 now. I don't know why I have this old lady voice, but it was so popular, they actually brought her back where some, unbeknownst to Steve, this cryogenic process was done to keep her in suspended animation until they could fix the blood clot and yada, yada. She didn't die, and she came out of it with her bionics, with her job with the government, leaving her tennis career behind, but she loses part of her memory, including the part where she was in love with Steve. So they have to start their friendship over just as friends, and there is not really anything too romantical about their relationship as her series progressed. Now, she ran two seasons on ABC, then ABC canceled it, and then NBC picked it up, which I guess also created this other first time thing where Richard Anderson, who plays Oscar Goldman, and Martin E. Brooks, who plays Rudy Wells, they were double dipping. They were on both series in the same characters, but on two different networks. So that was a big deal when that happened. That had never happened before, and I'm not sure it's really ever happened since. And according to the look on your face, I'm not sure you would want it to happen since.
Well, they had plenty of time to walk between the networks while they were filming. This wasn't nobody going nowhere quick.
So that's the origin story of the Bionic Woman. And basically, both of the series are just about these people with superpowers. It was interesting because the creators of the show were specific with the limitations of their powers. They were like, okay, they can jump up three stories. They cannot jump four stories.
Duh, well, that would be ridiculous.
Exactly. And one of the plot things in the Fembots episode is that Jamie jumped off of a fourth story or fifth story window. I think they can jump down four and up three or something. They set a number. But yeah, she's up there and she's even going, it's too high, it's too high. But she has no escape. She jumps down and her legs fucking explode underneath her. And, you know, you got to credit. You know, that's a thing that's kind of a big deal for me where I'm like, even the most ridiculous of things, I want there to be some sort of parameters. Because sure. If you don't, you get a fucking show like, you know, American Horror Story Coven, where it's like, oh, no, they've killed one of our witches. Oh, but we can bring them back to life when we feel like it. And, oh, no, she's been blinded. Someone threw acid in her face. Or, oh, she can just do some witchy spells and come out of it in a couple of more episodes, a couple more weeks. It's like, go fuck yourself. Jesus. Ryan Murphy.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Very upsetting.
Yeah. So there were a couple of crossover episodes where they went back and forth. And I've previously said on the other podcast that it was a big deal that, like, the Fembots episodes, that was a three-parter that started with Bionic Woman, went over to $6 Million Man, and came back to Bionic Woman. That was before the network jump. So that was when they were still all on ABC. And those are not in the $6 Million Man package. They're in the Bionic Woman package, and they're called Kill Oscar, and they are fucking awesome. The Fembots episodes are the shit. Forget Austin Powers, guys. You need to see the OG Fembots. They are creepy AF, and they still haunt my nightmares.
Ooh.
And there was also a Bigfoot carryover. You know where they discover Bigfoot?
Oh.
Yeah, turns out
never watched an episode of this or $6 Million Man. So this is all, these are all words.
I'm just telling you all that you've missed by not enjoying this series, Matthew, which is why you need to watch them all, binge them today if you can. But yeah, there's one, there's Bigfoot episodes where Steve Austin encounters Bigfoot. I actually watched those a few nights ago, and it's like, wow. But spoiler alert, Bigfoot is not a big creature thing. Bigfoot's actually bionic, and he's brought here by aliens from another planet.
I have no reason to watch that episode now.
Nope. Sorry, I had to spoil it. Had to do it. But I do want to ask you, I want to get your feelings and your thoughts. Yeah. Yeah. What is it about these women-centric shows that spoke to us as kids? Me, I loved The Bionic Woman. I loved Laverne and Shirley. I loved Wonder Woman. I loved One Day at a Time. I mean, obviously, the gay thing, feeling, you know, identifying with women versus dudes and men and stuff. But what is it there? What are your thoughts on that?
I don't know that I have thoughts on it. I think, I mean, there's some gays that are into NASCAR.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not it.
Yeah. Yeah, we know gays who are into football, and, you know, Eric Pinder's into hockey, but he's also into opera, so queer. I don't know. To me, I look back, and for me personally, I guess because I've never been a guy, I've never been a dude, I've never played sports, the only thing I can identify about myself that is kind of especially male or masculine is I do like a sleek sports car. A sports car driving down the street will turn my head. And I do like the smell of a new car interior, Matthew.
Mm. Right on.
But that's about it, really.
That's the straightest thing about you?
Hmm.
Hmm.
Can you think of anything else that I don't have the ability to see in myself?
No.
I mean, well, other than the me-centrism and the narcissism and all that shit, of course, that's, you know, that's because I'm a Leo.
I don't count that.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, to me, it's just fascinating to look back at these are the shows. And as you can tell, this is a show that makes me happy at the core of my soul, just for the memories, just for the nostalgia. And clearly that's kind of all that's there, because the actual quality of the show. Whew. So before we get too deep into the woods here, let's quickly talk Nuts and Bolts. It was directed by Larry Stewart. Actor, writer, producer. His credits go back to 1951. In the 1970s, he directed three episodes of The Bionic Woman, also The Incredible Hulk, The Amazing Spider-Man, Charlie's Angels. There's another one, Charlie's Angels. Fantasy Island, The Waltons, Buck Rogers. Lot of one-off directing things that were pretty high-profile shows. The episode was written by James D. Parriott. He wrote 15 episodes of the show for the duration of the series. He was there the entire time. But his IMDb is primarily producing and executive producing most of the shows that he's written for, including recent shows like Grey's Anatomy, Sons of Anarchy, Ugly Betty, plus multiple episodes of The Bionic Woman and The Incredible Hulk. Do you want to get into this? Do you want to get into this episode? All for one?
Sure.
Well, in this episode, we're at some sort of a college, and we see a very 1970s computer terminal being accessed after hours in the dark. We hear the voice of two dudes who are doing some hacking. The voices are clearly those of some young and, how shall I say, ethnic gentlemen, because there's a lot of, man, what are you doing? What are you talking about? Can't stop now. It's got that feel to it, and that's important.
Hey, Jive Turkey.
Yeah.
What are you doing taking so long?
But anyway, we hear somebody coming, and it's one of the professors. And this is played by Roger Perry. The reason why we're here, Roger Perry, who played Mr. Parker in seasons 2 through 5 of The Facts of Life, is the connection, the connective tissue to this. But anyhow, he almost catches these guys, but he just misses them, which is too bad.
And really doesn't seem that concerned about it.
Yeah.
again, we've got a 45 second shot of the door closing on the other side.
Yeah.
And wow. And then we have to come back to his 1 minute long reactionary shot of him seeing the door closing, but being like, oh, missed him. Like, like there's no way he could have gotten to that door and been like, hey, you, hey. He had plenty of time. I'm just saying.
He did. He totally did. Yep. So later at the OSI, which is the Office of Scientific Intelligence, that's the agency that Steve and Jamie work for. We have Oscar Goldman, who is Jamie's boss, Rudy Wells, who is the scientist who invented the bionics and performed the operations, installing them himself. The two of them are talking about there has been a breach in their computer systems, the OSIs. Small amounts of money have been stolen and transferred out of the accounts. And if these computer hackers are able to do this, clearly they're testing the waters because they intend to eventually steal top secret information from the OSI and they must be stopped.
That's exactly where they're going.
That's
exactly like that. When they were like, oh, yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
He's stealing $5,000. He wants all of our national secrets. No, I don't know that I would have taken that leap that quickly, but sure.
Oh, well.
I mean, we can't afford $5,000 a day, David.
We're a government-funded thing. Steve Austin costs $6 million, literally. Yeah. It's in the title, but...
These people are very worried about $5,000.
Yeah. I mean, in 1970, 78, that was a lot of money. Did you look up how much it was?
No, because I was laughing too hard.
So how do we solve this problem? What is the obvious solution?
We need the bionic woman. Thank God we've got her.
Yep. We need to send Jamie Summers undercover to pretend to be a student at this college and see if she can find and stop the hackers.
These shows like this, $6 Million Man, A-Team, Murder, She Wrote, it just, like, how many different ways? For three years, they had to come up with just ridiculous plot lines and figure out a way to get her into it. I just am fascinated by it.
Yep. Every single show.
Same show. The Incredible Hulk. All these shows, they're the same show.
I'm with you. How did they do it? How did they have Bill Bixby go into another town, find something bad, and then get angry and fix it as the big green monster? How did they do that? That was like easily five seasons, wasn't it? The Incredible Hulk?
At least like with like the soap operas, like with Dallas and stuff, the story changes. But like, none of these shows, one didn't have, we're never going to hear from Benny again. We're never going to see Dr. Tharp. That jive turkey.
He actually calls him a turkey, not a jive turkey. So I did have that in the plus column for the white writer trying to use the voice of a young black college student. At least he calls him a turkey and not a jive turkey or a, you know, cracker or something. I don't know
a honky.
A honky. like Charlotte Ray on the All in the Family. I was the only honky there. But oh my God, how many episodes? I swear to God, you could take Policewoman, Charlie's Angels, Wonder Woman. I think every single one of those four series had there's some shit going on at this beauty pageant. Gonna need you to go undercover as a contestant in the beauty pageant. Gonna have to have you put on a bathing suit and maybe sing a song. So this is where Jamie Summers comes in. She is on the campus of the college pretending to be a college student. Do you think she passes, Matthew?
Well, I was thankful that it was 70s. So, you know, you were either 45 or 19. So...
How old do you think Lindsay Wagner is here?
I looked it up. What is she, like 27 or 28. Something? 28.
Yep, she's 28.
I mean, it just, did they give her a bionic brain?
No, of course not.
Because it's just, let's just send her into this undercover thing and let her, I don't know.
Well, it's okay in that, you know, they put her in contact with Roger Perry. Roger Perry's the one that is their contact, that is the one that she's talking to, and he's the computer professor. So her cover is that she is there to take some classes, some computer classes. And when it is let slip by Roger Perry that she's with the government, she does have the additional cover of, oh, well, I mean, I'm here because the government agency that I work for is computerizing, and I'm just a clerk, and they just want me to be familiarized with some stuff, which for the time period, you know, was a good enough cover.
What kind of system are you going to use? A big one.
Yeah, he says, what kind of computer system? And she says, a big one. And to our delight, he does not buy it. To his credit, he doesn't buy that.
Big one.
Uh-huh.
Tell me you don't know anything about computers without telling me you don't know anything about computers.
But she, that's it. But her cover is, I'm just a clerk. I'm just learning, you know, data entry, basically. I don't know. For the time, I mean, 78, this was still very early. The infancy, I mean, we didn't even really have home computers. Yeah, I mean, we didn't. It hadn't been invented yet. While we're talking about age, Lindsay Wagner's 28. How old do you think Richard Anderson and Martin E. Brooks are as Oscar Goldman and Rudy Wells?
35 and 30 and 39.
If I had said you were correct, no one could refute that. But actually, Richard Anderson is 51. Martin Brooks is 52.
Jesus.
Yeah. And I'm sorry, when they're both on screen together, I'm like, well, if this doesn't look like toupees on parade, Jesus. And with the longer hairstyles of the 70s, the fact that the sides and the back are a little overgrown and flipping and curling and stuff, but they have these perfectly coiffed, straightened, plastered down things on top of their head. It's just, oh, bless. Bless their heart. Interestingly, it's one of those things where, so Jamie's undercover. The first people she comes in contact with are these dudes who run a food truck. They work for the campus food services. So they're not students, they're employees. And she ends up befriending them. This black guy, Benny, almost runs her over. Well, does run her over on his bicycle, rushing to work. And then she finds him at the food truck. And we meet this Benetton ad of a trio all working out of this same food truck. Did you catch all of their names?
Oh, what was it? Mango.
Benny, Stubbs, and Mango.
Yeah.
I want a spinoff series for these dudes as computer hackers who run a food truck. That's a five. That right. Green light it. Benny, Stubbs, and Mango. What the fuck? But yeah, and it is literally a black guy, a white guy, and a native guy. Yeah. If you're not sure, if you can't sort it out, all three of them. And of the three, Benny and Stubbs are clearly the actors. Mango, the native guy, he has some moments where you're like, oof. And then you look at his IMDb and you're like, oh, he's primarily a stuntman. Ah, I can see that. Did you do any research on him, Henry Kinji, who plays Mango?
Not on him, but I looked up Stubbs. This was his final acting credit. He threw in the towel after this episode.
Mm-hmm. And he wasn't bad. He was at least given the opportunity to play torn between doing the good thing and the bad thing and shoot her. Why aren't you shooting her? And I can't and all that stuff. But the part of Mango, our friend Henry Kinji, I had to look him up because he's fascinating. He's insanely tall. And he is Native American, African American, European, and Japanese. And guess whom he married in 1981?
Okay. How many guesses do I get?
One.
Oh, crap. He married Sandra Locke.
Who the fuck is Sandra Locke?
That was Clint Eastwood's girlfriend in the 80s.
Oh, was it? Okay. Nope. Think much closer to home here.
Charlotte Ray.
Okay, I will help you. Third time's the charm. Lindsay Wagner. They met making this episode. They were married for only 3 years, from 81 to 84. But he is the father of her two sons, her only two children. Their younger son was born in 86. So clearly they had an extended time of uncoupling there. But yeah, look up pictures online. I'll post one on the website of Lindsay Wagner and her two sons, who are also both stuntmen. Literally, they look like skinny clones of their dad, like how skinny he probably was when he was a teenager, because they are both like 6.5 feet tall, darker complected, jet black hair. It's just like, holy shit. This dude is the father of her children. And I will reiterate, not a good actor. And did not do much acting after this. So, anyhow, we meet Benny Stubbs and Mango. And at one point, we hear someone ask for a special or a special special. And we suddenly see them pulling out some cash and putting it inside a folded napkin and putting that inside the container with the sandwich and the chips and giving it to the person. And you're like, oh, there's some shady shit going on here. And already you're like, well, we know money's been stolen. We heard the ethnical voices of the computer hackers. We've already found the bad guys here. This is it. Home run. But they're giving the money to random students, including this creepy ass fucking old lady.
Yeah.
What? Please tell me your thoughts about this old lady here, Mrs. Simpson.
Oh, I guess they couldn't get Ruth Gordon.
True. She already had her Oscar. She was too big for this shit.
She was too busy probably making Any Which Way But Loose.
Bless.
But I looked her up and she's like almost 70 in this. So
yeah.
And I think this was her first acting credit.
Yeah, she went on to do a lot of stuff later. But yeah, this is her first credit. She is 70 or 71 here, depending on when it was made. Her name is a weird one. Viola Cates, not Kate, Cates, plural. Stimpson, playing Mrs. Simpson. So there's a T in that name. Viola Cates Stimpson. Yeah. And what a weird fucking character. They're like, how'd you do on your test? And she's like, I came up with aces. I did all A's. And because the camera is outside the food truck, clearly she was directed to, you know, face out. We don't want a shot of the back of your head. And they clearly weren't going to give her a over the shoulder, whatever. So she's like looking away from them. Like, I can't say this to your face. I'm being bashful. I have a perfect updo with these weird ringlet curls on either side of my face. And you're like, what is happening here?
Again, somebody had to write this and they were like, let's add another character, an old lady. Let's make her part of the jig. You know?
But a little bit, but not a lot of it. You know, she's kind of more of, an innocent accessory. I think they even say she doesn't know the full scope of what's going on. But anyway, with that, Jamie then makes contact with Roger Perry. He explains the situation, and Roger Perry is very quick to dismiss Benny as being a possible threat to this, even though Jamie, through her bionic ear, has overheard some suspicious shit, and he keeps going, it couldn't be him. He's a nobody. He's a stupid person. And initially, you're kind of like, oh, careful, we're getting a little into the territory of racism, dismissing the intelligence of a young black man. But we then later realize, plot twist, Roger Perry is the real bad guy. He's trying to throw her off the scent. Did you see that one coming, Matthew?
I didn't see it coming, but when I tell you how surprised I was and yet creeped out by the scene where it's revealed, where he comes up behind Stubbs.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, are they going to, are they going to do it?
They're outside at night in the bushes. And,
right.
Yeah. Yeah. So what's really going on here is that the students that Benny Stubbs and Mango are hacking into the system literally just to steal money. They are financing other college students who are the displaced, the disenfranchised, like Mrs. Simpson, who at one point talks to Jamie and says, well, I was just going to end up rotting away in an old folks' home, and now I get to go to college and learn things, and this is such an exciting time for me. So we're doing a true Robin Hood thing. And Roger Perry knows it, but he is much more interested in how the fuck these kids managed to hack into the mainframe via the Library of Congress. So he steals their program with the actual bad guy intent of stealing government secrets from the OSI and selling them to our nebulous enemies over there in, you know, all that. So, so he's actually the bad guy. And he's in cahoots with Stubbs. Stubbs is the one who he's promised some money to for Stubbs to sabotage the other two. And Mrs. Simpson gets in on it, and people are chased and caught, and guns are pulled out, and they end up tied up in the food truck. A bomb is set. Jamie gets everybody out before the gas inhalation kills them, and the thing explodes, and they end up in the library. I was like, those bookshelves are coming down like dominoes.
Yeah.
That was a given. That's like the fruit cart during a car chase. We're in a library, we will be back, and one of those bookshelves is coming down on top of one of the bad guys, which it does, and Roger Perry is caught through especially the help of Stubbs, who, when he has the moment to shoot Jamie point blank, he can't do it. He's actually very, very conflicted about his dastardly deeds. So all ends up okay. Could we talk about the title of this episode? All for One.
I didn't know why that was the title.
You and me both, my friend. I think somebody thought that that was a Robin Hood quote, because this is like stealing from the rich and giving to the poor situation. And All for One and One for All is the Three Musketeers.
Yeah.
Which I guess we have three musketeers here. There really was no real sense of their solidarity being a thing. In fact, that's the problem, is that Stubbs is selling them out for some extra money from Roger Perry. So that was weird. And I think that might've been a misstep, or, you know, the first draft of this was different. That made more sense, like the Three Musketeers. But anyway, what did you think of the 70s tech? You always enjoy that on the Facts of Life. Anytime 80s tech came into play, what did you think of the 70s tech here?
Oh, I did notice like how hard the keystrokes had to be. Those were the kind of computers I learned on, was back in the day when like the keystrokes really like were satisfying.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like there was, anyway, but I did notice that with the computer.
Well, they were built to last. Now my MacBook Pro, I upgrade two additional operating systems and it's obsolete and I have to throw it the fuck away. So they were built to last back in the 70s, that's for sure.
Well, and I think again it speaks to the why my generation is a little more afraid of computers, because it's like, oh, we remember the days when you could press one wrong button and suddenly you were hacking into the Library of Congress.
And you were Matthew Broderick launching the nuclear missiles. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But I will never get past like that. Like when she has to meet that jock and then she steps on the thing and he flies her, or she flies him away. But like the 45 second clip of Benny having to watch the thing in slow motion. We're already on Quaaludes. We don't need slow motion in this.
You're so right. And that's come up so many, even in the day, like even when Mad Magazine spoofed this back in, you know, in its day, it was like, so wait a minute. Every time we speed up, we slow down. Every time she runs, the whole and then on the impact and stuff. It is bizarre. It is bizarre. Like, you will have entire fight sequence. Watch the Fembots episodes. You have full on fist fights between two people in slow goddamn motion.
Ugh.
And it is so weird. And yet we bought it. We went, yep. There's a clip in one of the $6 million men. I think it's in the opening theme and in one of the episodes where somebody with a pair of binoculars spies him. So it's this person's point of view, not the omniscient camera's point of view, where they see him and they do run the film fast, where he's just like zipping by. And the fact that early in the episode, you know, the writers were like, okay, we need to have her use her bionics at some point early. We're going to get to the 25-minute mark and have nothing happen. So they have the boys in the food truck unable to open one of the gigantic cans of ketchup because the can opener's broken. And she's like, oh, I'm pretty good with can openers, and takes it, turns her back to cut. And we see her use her thumbnail on her right hand only, because it's only her right arm that's bionic. We see her use her thumbnail on this clearly tinfoil top, clearly. And then hands it back, and they're like, whoa, you really are good with can openers, lady. Wow. And then when the jock is being deeply chauvinistic and inappropriate and fucking putting his hands on her, you goddamn creeper, he's on a concrete stool. And in front of Benny, she steps on one end of it and catapults him like a fucking tiddlywink over the bushes. And yeah, because of the slow motion, Benny's watching it. It's just like, oh, and nothing is said. Nothing is said about it after.
But not even like a holy cabooses. It's literally like an eye roll almost. Like, yeah. Like his face is not saying, oh my God, she just shot this son of a bitch 10 feet in the air. Nothing about that.
Yeah, he's a spectator, like, he's not like, reactor.
Holy caboose, it does nothing.
Holy shit, what the fuck?
No,
how high even am I right now?
Not even. It's like he eye rolls watching the guy fly through the thing. And
so we have these two very, very innocuous uses of her superpowers before we get into actual things like, you know, breaking locks and breaking chains. And I had to laugh in Rudy's lab at the beginning when Rudy and Oscar are talking about the situation and the problem, how it's that computer room with the refrigerators with the reel-to-reel tapes.
Yeah.
And at one point, he pulls out an 11 by 14 post binder with the two covers with a fan-folded printout with the green and white stripes in it and, you know, this teletype typewriter print. And his the other thing is he ran a background of who could be the person that might be able to do this with our computers. And it's like, well, clearly it's a person that has a PhD. Clearly it's a person who's an adult. Clearly they're over 30. Clearly they're not a black student. Clearly they don't work in food service. It's like, whoa, you got it all wrong, Mr. Computer. You underestimated these kids. He's going to grow up to be Richard Pryor in Superman 3. How did you program that code to launch the missiles? I don't know, man. I just did it. Thank you, movie, for that highly, highly detailed and complex explanation. She has a lot of hair, doesn't she? It really frequently gets in the way, doesn't it?
I had no thoughts about her hair. She's lovely. But I just cannot imagine.
Talk to me about what you think about Lindsay Wagner. Yes, let's do this.
Like, that actress was so beloved after one episode of Steve Austin
mm-hmm.
that people couldn't get enough of her. She's boring as paint.
Oh my God, Matthew. How very dare you?
I'm sorry. I just, like, dead behind me eyes. I just didn't get it.
What I like about her, I didn't realize it at the time, is there is a little quirkiness to her. There's a little, just on the edge of something kooky. Her voice, the inflections of her voice and stuff, but it's appealing. Offbeat, there's a good word. She's kind of a little different. She's not what the girls were doing on Charlie's Angels. She's not Kate Jackson, who you feel like, okay, can I go get a snack while you read me your doctoral dissertation on whatever, you know, where Kate Jackson is so super intelligent, and, you know, Farrah Fawcett, who is gorgeous and not stupid, but also a little flighty. I don't know. I think she's had the right balance. I always thought she was like Linda Carter. I feel like she had a certain ingredient that you can't quite describe.
All right.
That made her right for this, but you don't agree. Who would you have rather seen play the Bionic Woman, Matthew?
I wouldn't have rather seen anybody.
You wouldn't have greenlit the fucking series.
I would not have watched it either way. that god awful opening sequence, is that a douche commercial, or are we having a sci-fi show here, for God's sake?
It's got teletype print out
at the beginning, and you think you're getting a show like the A-Team that has an appropriate music to it.
Yeah, the tone of it
is, this is like
it is kind of douche commercial, isn't it?
And it's like soft focus, her just walking and smiling and walking.
And jumping and running in slow, fast motion. Fast, slow motion, whatever. You know, and I guess maybe the intent was because, you know, the $6 million man certainly did have a lot more edge to it, if you've ever seen that opening theme.
Nope.
So it's, there's a lot more. I think probably the intent was this has to be the softer, kinder, gentler, feminine version, because we have that other show to do that shit. She doesn't need to be a badass to cast Linda Hamilton as Sarah Connor. Though she would have been too young at this point, that would have been a bad choice. That definitely would have put people off. Did you catch that after the flipping of the football player, later there's a scene where she's going back to the guys at the food truck, and the football player, he's almost in the background, and he's just about to, like, cross paths with her, and you see him go, what? Oh, fuck. And he just, like, changes his path to walk it the other way. I missed that the first time, so I laughed out loud when I saw it. And I was like, nice little touch. Thank you, Mr. Director. Thank you for putting him in there. Because he's like, I don't want to fuck with her. A little bit ahead of its time with the fact that these were just students. Their ethnic backgrounds weren't really much of a thing, other than Benny does say, I know I'm smart. I couldn't get a scholarship, and scholarships go to white students, things like that. Like, there was a little bit of that brought in here, but at one point there's just a walk-on single scene with a dude who is clearly Latino, who is, hey, man, do you think you could help me out with another special? I'm a little short this month. And they're like, yeah, of course. Don't even worry about it. So they give him the money. So we know that they're helping not just their own people. We know that they're also helping people of other ethnicities, as well as elderly Mrs. Stimson. So, you know, the show is not being ageist or racist. And I do want to give it its props for that, that they didn't make the racial thing too much of a thing. Didn't you like Stubbs' dramatical moment when they put all of them, they tie them all up in the van, and their hands are tied up on this, like, upper bar. And their hands are clearly free enough that they could just slide over and untie each other's hands.
Yeah.
Like, it's so obvious, like, wow, this is some bad 70s TV show shit. Well, then they get out, the van blows up. Well, Roger Perry is still in the computer lab with Stubbs. And so they hear the explosion, and Stubbs is in that kind of state of daze. do you think they felt anything?
Oh, yeah.
He's like, what are you talking about? When they died, do you think, I don't know, shut the fuck up, hold that light steady. So, I mean, they were asking a lot of this young actor, and I've seen so much worse than what he did. This kid Stubbs, who ends up being more pivotal to the story than we realize.
That's all I got to say about that show, David.
Honestly, I don't really have much else myself either, my love. So I take it you're not going to be rushing back over to the Roku channel to start from season one, episode one with this.
God, no. Jesus. Good Lord.
And I did watch a few episodes. There, Roger Perry is in another episode in another role. And he's also in two different $6 Million Man episodes in two completely other roles. So they used him a bit, you know, before that Mr. Parker gig came rolling in. But there are also other crossovers. You know, there is an episode where Helen Hunt plays an alien from another planet. I thought that might be a good follow-up for us to do if you enjoyed this one. And I thought it might pair well with the Julie Ann Haddock alien episode of Wonder Woman. Go figure, the same plot.
Yikes.
I guess we'll go back to the drawing board on this one, huh? Oh, and the last thing I do want to say about this, production values wise, both the $6 Million Man and the Bionic Woman have this weird thing where they do a lot of fixing in post, where you're looking at a scene and a frame, and suddenly it will dramatically zoom in to one item on the screen. And you can tell it's not a zoom done on the day of the shoot. You can tell it was done in post-production. And they do it all the time. I would have expected this, like, you know, season one, before they kind of hit their stride and figured out how to, you know, what the visual rhetoric was going to be of the series and all that. But they seem to do it consistently. And so my thought is, so did they just never care? They were just like, shoot this one wide angle. If we want a close up, just fucking fix it in post. So that's weird. Did you notice that? Did you have any sense of that? Or is that just me being super duper obsessive?
Super duper obsessive. Did not notice it.
Yeah.
Wouldn't put it past him to not really want to. Who said that? The words, let's try that again.
Yeah, let's do another take. Not said. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, true. It's an hour long show, single camera. That's a lot to put out every week. That is a wicked lot. So it could just be that they were like, nope, we don't have time. The post is the only cushion we have. But the thing with me, when you see things in post like that, they, back in those days, you lost a generation of film quality, of the quality. It suddenly looks a little bit grainier. And anytime there's like a fade out to black, or there's a superimposition or a dissolve or something, you notice that in these older shows. Now, of course, with digital, it's, you know, it's undetectable. It's, you don't lose any quality because it's all done on the computers. But anyway. So, Matthew, want to talk about next month?
Oh, God.
Do you want to talk about what we might do and talk about next month on TV Talkaholics?
What's that?
I was thinking I would let you choose.
Oh, God.
And here, I will preface this by saying, you know, our close personal friend Ken Reed was just on the show talking about The Girl Most Likely To. And on that, he told me that he had Dan Frischman coming up on an episode of his show. That episode dropped, got to listen to it. Super nice guy. Dan Frischman played Carl Rocky Price in Kids Can Be Cruel, the Facts of Life episode where Blair is trying to sell off her big pink box.
Yeah.
That's the one they did on the live reenactment of it. So because Dan Frischman also was on every episode of Head of the Class, you say there are great musical episodes of Head of the Class where they do full-scale musicals. Mm. The show is streaming completely on the Freevee channel. So would you do me the honor of picking which one you think would be a good one for us to do? And we will already commit right now that next month will be and episode of Head of the Class with one of the musical performances. I don't mean you have to pick it right now, this very second. I just mean I need you. I'm just looking for your buy-in. That's all.
Okay. Yep. Okay.
Yeah. That would work for you.
Yeah.
Good. And I know you watched Head of the Class growing up, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. See, that's more of a you show than a me show. I was a little old, you know, and you're so much younger than I am.
Yeah.
So, if you would do that, that's what we can kind of leave as our parting words, our little teaser for what is coming up next month. But before we sign off, the Bionic Woman, for me, David, I give it 4.5 talkaholic chips. I won't give it a full 5 because of stuff in the 70s, and I cannot refute any of the problems and issues you have with it. But still, nostalgia counts for so much, if not everything. So I say 4.5 talkaholic chips. Matthew, how do you rate it?
I give it 4 quaaludes and maybe like maybe a talkaholic chip. I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
One chip and 4 quaaludes to make up for the other missing.
Like, let it end.
Well, anyhoozle, this has been fun. And thank you for enduring this. I didn't realize you were going to enjoy it as little as you did. But
what are you gonna do?
Yeah, that's what it is. This is my childhood, and I'm sorry. There's just something that happens when I hear that. Oh, love it. So until next time, dear listeners, thank you so much for downloading. And we will be back at you next month with a fresh new episode. Bye, Matthew.
Bye, David.
We'll make you happy.
Come and knock on our door.
Come and knock on our door.
Where we're moving on.
That uncompromising, enterprising, anything but tranquilizing.
Here's the story.
You take a